Where do you see God? This is a question I may ask someone who meets with me for spiritual direction. When I'm not working here, I also work as a spiritual director and meet with several people, usually once a month. As a spiritual director, these are people who want to come and tune themselves better, to be attentive to what God is doing in their life and where they may find God in the world. Or they may be in a time of discernment or crisis. And so we meet together. Where do you see God? I may start a session by asking. This is a question that I think is particularly pertinent to us at this point in our church year, on this Palm Sunday with Holy Week in front of us. This Passion Sunday with the whole Passion of Jesus lying ahead of us. And this year has been a little different because we have been preaching through some of the events that happen after today's reading, first reading from Palm Sunday, the Palm Sunday reading. But we also have been looking at the events that lead to the second reading, the crucifixion. And so we've kind of been exploring this passion all Lent. And there's a lot of dissonance in that. It's hard sometimes to know where to find God, where we can see God, and why, in fact, it's of value to spend time looking for God in these difficult places, like the places we find in Holy Week. But we begin in the traditional way that we're used to beginning on this Sunday as a church, with the palm procession, the children come in, and Jesus has kind of his big moment of being lauded, of the crowds really seeming to be behind him. And this is pretty unusual for Jesus. You don't see this a lot in his ministry. Oh, he had a lot of crowds around him, but very often these crowds, they came because they wanted something from him, or even because they wanted to challenge him. They were mixed, and there were certainly supporters, there were seekers. But on this procession, this odd procession with the donkey and Jesus riding, kind of in this little humble parade coming in, there seemed to be this extra level of support and praise and encouragement of him. Something pretty unusual. And yet, even within that, there we see the controversy stirring among the religious leaders who wonder what to do about this man who's gaining such popularity. They're very uncomfortable with that. They don't like it. And as they watch this parade, they begin to plot about what they'll do next. And so even in this moment of accolade, We sense what is about to come, even if we didn't already know the story. And then we find Jesus on the cross. And it's an interesting time then to ask the question, without jumping ahead, where do you see God in this? Even Jesus seems to ask that question at one point on the cross. He says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Quoting the psalm. Now, it's not that Jesus was questioning who God was or if God existed. It's just that in that moment of suffering, of intense and deep suffering, it was hard to see God amidst such pain and injustice. And maybe you too have had trouble seeing God in times of crisis and distress. And yet, the answer is a very paradoxical one, a very dissonant one, because the truth is that it is in that act, that redemptive act of Jesus on the cross, suffering with those who suffer, that salvation occurs, that God's character is most clearly seen. We see the character of God throughout Jesus' journey to the cross. And if we were to read all of the readings that go with that from the various gospels, we could point to when the women cry out and are wailing, and Jesus says to them while carrying his cross, essentially, "Don't worry about me, it's you that I'm weeping for." We see the character of God, this unselfishness, when he says to the thief that is being crucified next to him that he too will be together in paradise with Jesus. We see it when he cries out to forgive those who have done this. This is the character of God, never more visible, perhaps, than right now. And there's dissonance in that. There's paradox in that. And it doesn't seem to make sense. Why would God be so visible in this time of greatest distress? Spiritual directors and those who study spirituality will often be able to talk to you about the experience of walking with people in what they call the dark night of the soul. Often this is a time when people who have deeply experienced God's presence in their life in very tangible and connected ways later feel this period where they have trouble seeing God. Very famously, in the last few decades, this was shown in the posthumous publishing of the letters of Mother Teresa, who revealed that through much of her life, she didn't see or feel God in the way she desired to. She did experience this dark night of the soul, and yet, in her life, so many other people saw God. And many spiritual directors will tell you that at the very moment that people are going through this dark night, they have never been more fruitful, spiritually speaking. There has never been more obviousness to those looking at them that God is present in and with them. Why would this be? Why would there be this dissonance between not being able to clearly see God yourself when others can see God in you, maybe more than ever? And I think part of the answer for that is humility. You see, when Jesus was up on that cross, was being chided to come down and save himself. Jesus was being chided to call on the angels to come and take away his pain, to release him from this earthly experience. Jesus was chided to be the kind of Messiah we expected, for goodness sake. Not this confusing one. Not this one that made us uncomfortable and sad and scared. These were really the same temptations that Jesus faced at the beginning of his earthly ministry. And they were essentially the temptations to put aside humility and to act out of pride, bringing all of his power that he had access to exploit that on the backs of others for his own glory. And it is in understanding his choice to reject these that we understand something of the character of God, that we can see a glimpse of God that is hard to see elsewhere. It wasn't that Jesus was tempted to do nothing, to be apathetic. No, the temptations were for him to bend the way and the character of God to the way and the character of this world. That was the temptation. And to resist that required one thing: humility. The ability to care and be in solidarity so much with others that one could lay one's own interests aside because you were so overflowing with love for those around you. And in that, God's interests were in fact served. And the word humility comes from the word humus, which means of the earth. The word humus brings us into this sense that we are, in a way, nothing more than part of the earth. That we are no greater, no separate from the earth around us. And so we might describe humility as a recognition of that part of ourselves that comes from the earth. We are created to be one part of a vast landscape in which our God is present. To be humble is to recognize our part in that. Humility is about honesty, recognizing both our gifts that we have been given and the desire of our Creator that we should use those gifts in humble service to others. Humility is about being grounded in the place on this earth where we find ourselves, in our uniqueness, both as a gifted and a limited and wounded creature. We must learn that life is more than just our view. We are one part of something greater. In her book, The Artist's Rule, Nurturing the Creative Soul with Monastic Wisdom, Christine Waltner's Paintner writes, naming for ourselves where we are not being called is essential to discovering where we are being called to devote the fullness of our energy. We live in a world with so many good and worthy opportunities that we can feel pulled in many, many directions. Humility reminds us that we are not called to be all things to all people. Honoring our limits as creatures can be deeply liberating, as is surrendering our demanding inner perfectionism. Humility invites us to release these expectations and enter into the call of our gifts, knowing that it may look very different from what we imagined. Gently and compassionately recognizing our flaws can bind us closer to others and to God. We must have patience with the unfolding of our lives and the world, and understand that God's kingdom unfolds in God's time. When we do so, we discover that we are not solely responsible for saving the world. Acknowledging these limits can liberate us from our compulsions and frantic busyness and lead us toward recognizing our interdependence. And in this way, we are each contributors to the whole. There is something dynamic about understanding our humility. Paradoxically, it can be empowering for us to act in this way. And maybe more important, it helps us understand this character of who God really is. One commentator puts it this way: the doctrine of the Trinity teaches that the divine life is found in dispossession, in an eternal circle of unrestricting giving to the other. Likewise, God's power in the creaturely world is found in utter self-giving to what is not God. God is not in a rivalry with human agents for glory or majesty. God, the creator of all, is not in competition with creatures for power or resources. Unlike us, God has no position to defend, no personal interests to protect. There is no envy or selfish ambition in the Godhead. Accordingly, to be in the form of God is not to exploit one's superior power, but to manifest God's free, dispossessing love. There is a flow in this service, beginning with palms and ending on the cross. It is like the flow of life, with peaks and valleys never fully separate from one another. And as we approach this week, we hold this tension. We don't want to leave here today. I think there's with Jesus on the cross. We don't want to spend the week with a Jesus who has died. We want to jump ahead. And I think there's a reason that we tend to want to do Palm Sunday instead of Passion Sunday this week. It's much easier to leave on that high. It's much harder to see God in that space between. This is how we often react in our own lives to pain or distress or injustice. We don't want to spend time in this uncomfortable space. And why wouldn't we want to move on? I think the answer is an important one, because we may actually best be able to see God in the pain. We may actually be able to best draw ourselves more closely in line with God in those moments. And so it is important not to rush through them, to give them their due. And that's part of what Lent has been about for us, especially this year. And as we look at the symbols of Lent that have guided us through, the words that have gone up each week, we remember them today. Grief, truth, humility, service, power, and courage. In their whole, they remind us of Jesus and what he taught us about each of these. And there could be other words put up to remind us. I mean, Jesus not only walked with those in grief, he walked with those in joy as well. Jesus not only taught us about power, he taught us about power through peace. Words like love and grace and mercy could also be set here, but our stories this Lent have reminded us of these characters of our God, most visibly seen, perhaps, as Jesus approaches his death. And as followers of Jesus, his humility today, I think, is a helpful reminder, so countercultural to us in this time, that God is by nature a God who manifests humility, not exploiting power, but instead walking humbly with us. we see this. And I think it's maybe best described in Philippians, where we are invited to have the mind of Christ or the attitude of Christ. And in Philippians 2, 5 through 11, perhaps one of the oldest passages from our New Testament writings, perhaps goes back to the very earliest worship. We read, adopt the attitude that was in Christ Jesus. Though he was in the form of God, he did not consider being equal with God something to exploit. But he emptied himself by taking the form of a slave and by becoming like a human being. When he found himself in the form of a human, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Where do we see God? We see God in those who have the mind of Christ, the attitude of Christ. We see God in those who have suffered like Christ and endured injustice like Christ. Where do we see God? Sometimes we see God so close to us in our distress that God is hard to see. Instead, God is the air we breathe, the spirit that sustains us and wakes us up each morning. I invite us in this next week to spend time in this space between death and resurrection. Think of it as a Holy Saturday week. And see if in those moments, in fact, God is very close indeed.